Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. More than 8 out of 10 African Americans think President Trump is a racist. That is just one of the findings of last week's Washington Post Ipsos poll. And there is so much more to talk about in this explosively interesting poll. All of this happening in the shadow of today's impeachment trial getting underway on Capitol Hill. Today, we're going to take a look at what appears to be a very pessimistic view by black people when asked about America in the midst of this impeachment trial. My guests are Dr. Niambi Carter. She's a professor of political science here at Howard University, Douglas Sloan, political strategist, and Atiba Madjun, political strategist. Boy, oh boy. What a way to start a Tuesday. Thanks for joining me, everybody.
Thanks for having me.
Ladies first, Dr. Carter, I'm sure you have been riveted, or at least interested, in what has been going on Capitol Hill. Even before I get to this poll, what are your thoughts about the way things are going right now on the Hill?
Well, I mean, I think they're unfolding as people thought they would. Like, there was going to be a lot of haggling over procedure. So I think that was as expected. So I don't think that there were any big surprises today. So, I mean, that doesn't mean that there's not more to come. I mean, there's still several days to go. But I think that February 4th deadline that Donald Trump was hoping for may not make it through this, or they may not make it to that February 4th deadline.
Real quick, can you, if at all possible, take off your political science hat and put on your gal from Glen Arden hat? is the woman from Glen Arden really interested in what's going on Capitol Hill? Do you care?
Probably not, only because I think part of what happens a lot of times is people who are sort of not aware, even in the most basic way, of what's sort of happening and why this is a problem may not necessarily get sort of all that was sort of talked about today in terms of rules and the Second Amendment, et cetera, et cetera. So I think for regular people, they probably get a little lost in the details, and it's not the most riveting thing to watch, right? I mean, let's be clear, this is not Scandal.
Some people may say that it is.
I mean, it is, but it definitely does not have, you know, all the bells and whistles. It's not necessarily sexy, let's put it that way. But certainly, I mean, I think people know probably on the margins that this is something that's important. I just don't know that they're able to put it all together in that way.
Atiba, do you agree with that?
I do. I think, you know, just talking to my mother today and asking her if she was watching it, she says she wasn't. You know, and for me, watching the parts of it that I did see, it's boring. I mean, it is. It's all about procedure right now. And the Democrats, though, I think are laying a good case here, what they already knew, that these things were either going to get tabled or voted down. And everything is following, I think, the course that they expected it to. It's all political, though. And so I think where the Democrats, too, are looking at, I hope, down the road, how this is going to play out during the summer months and going into November 2020.
Is this a hot buttered popcorn and jujubes moment for you, Doug? Or is this more, I got to watch it because this is what I do?
It is for me, because so much of this plays into what I do for a living, so I need to know everything that's going on. And as far as people that, you know, your everyday Joe, run-of-the-mill person, you know, they realize it's going on, but, you know, obviously, like, today was just about deciding the rules of the day that are going to move forward with impeachment, so we're not going to hear first opening arguments until tomorrow. So today obviously wasn't that interesting. But, you know, I have cousins that call me up and ask me, hey, what's going on? Hey, is this really going to happen? Are we really going to get this, they call him the orange buffoon, out of office? And we're looking at a hard majority in the Senate. But, you know, the wild card there is if they actually vote to call witnesses. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It is hard. will be hard to make American people understand that you have a trial without witnesses.
Your cousins are calling you. My cousins aren't calling in. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. If you have a comment or question about what's going on the Hill or this Washington Post Ipsos poll, which is just really fascinating to me because on the surface of it, one may say, okay, well, I get it. I'm not surprised. But when you really start drilling down into a bit of the information about this, I really find this, you know, quite fascinating with, you know, with things that are being said. 77% of Black Americans think it's a good time to be a white person. For example, I just find that to be really interesting. They say it's bad. It's a bad time to be Black in America, some 65%. And they rate the national economy, 56% rate the national economy negatively. What do you think about that, Dr. Carter?
Well, I mean, I think it's par for the course. I mean, I don't know when in American history it wasn't a good time to be a white man. And I think Blacks have probably been acutely aware of this. And so that they say that is not surprising or shouldn't be surprising. And that they think Donald Trump is a racist also shouldn't be surprising. I mean, he built a whole political campaign around white supremacy or at least pandering to that impulse in American society. So I don't find these survey results all that surprising. I just think it's nice to have the empirics so that when you say what you kind of feel on the ground or what you know from your experience, you actually have the numbers to show or to demonstrate that that's there. But we shouldn't be surprised that this is the sentiment.
Yeah, but in 2009, you know, I think there were a lot of people that were walking around who African-American who felt like it was cool to be Black. You know, we had just won the 2008 election with President Obama. And there were a lot of people who I think felt that, oh, wow, uh-oh, this is not good for us. And so now we're talking, there's a polar opposite, you know, in terms of having Trump in the White House. And there are a lot of things, I think, really to be scared of. You look at the judicial nominations that have gone through through Congress, and we're not talking about that. We're not talking about the policy. We keep hearing about the executive orders that keep getting rolled back. But this is what happens when you don't have any civil discourse or things that are going on in terms of negotiation and compromise in Congress, which we haven't seen. We saw a lot of gridlock under Obama. But what bothers me often is how often the president talks about unemployment numbers of African Americans are at an all-time low because he's not going into Black communities and he's not hearing from Blacks who are still struggling or struggling far worse than they were before. And a lot of the progress, though, that the economy has experienced is still a byproduct of President Obama's administration. And I don't think that we're doing a good job of telling that part of the story.
Absolutely. Black unemployment dropped from 16.8% to 6.5% under Barack Obama's administration. That trend continues under Trump. However, during Trump's tenure, it's only gone down from 6.5 to 5.5. So we're still seeing continuation of the Obama economy with this rising stock market, with dropping unemployment levels, with high, very low jobless rates. We're seeing a continuation of the Obama economy, except we are not seeing the effort to tackle some of the civil rights issues that Obama made. For example, just regarding what the stuff, some of the things that Trump has rolled back in department, all the civil rights protections in the Department of Justice, Department of Education, Department of Labor, Department of Education is no longer investigating allegations of racism in our nation's public schools. The Department of Justice is no longer using court enforced agreements to protect civil rights and reform police departments. And the Department of Labor is no longer punishing racist discriminatory practices within the construction industry. That's just three examples we see. Trump has rolled all of those things back, not to mention that he's tried to roll back Obamacare. And just 2 days ago, he rolled back Michelle Obama's healthy eating program on her birthday, no less. So I can understand the Black angst toward this president when he has single-handedly tried to destroy and roll back all of the advancements made by President Barack Obama. And Barack Obama is a great president. Even national polls indicate that most people think that he is the greatest president in their lifetimes.
And even if you take out the president piece and just look at the man, a lot of those polls will say that he remains one of the most popular people in the world.
Absolutely.
And then no doubt Obama made black people more optimistic about the future, but that was one out of 45, right? So there's way more evidence, at least on the side, that this kind of cynicism is warranted than there is evidence of optimism. Part of the reason we have a Donald Trump is people's beliefs about a Barack Obama. And by people, I mean whites in particular.
Let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Kim, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Kim. Quickly, what's on your mind?
Well, as I stated before, I was calling in regards to the poll that was taken about being black in America today. And, you know, we're talking about a president here that have broken every rule since he was in the race. Now, once he became president, every other president had to put up their tax papers. This man still hasn't done them. Not only that, he has incited a race war, in my opinion. He incites violence. He incites disrespect towards women. But not, you know, just all of the things that Obama have put in place, you're right. He wants to roll those back. And it has nothing to do with the benefit of America. That's personal, in my opinion.
Okay.
Now,
well, Kim, that's all right. Thank you so much for your opinion. I'm going to take another call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dan, calling from D.C. Dan, what's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Listen, this trial is a fraud. They go from no witnesses to now, I believe it's now witnesses. Regardless if you have witnesses or not, who is running the Senate right now? This whole trial is a dog and pony show, smoke and mirrors, whatever you want to call it. It's a fraud. The man won't be removed because of who is being who is running the Senate. The sycophants, as I called in it from your person that took my call, the spineless senators that for whatever reason are kissing his tail. I don't know what kind of dirt this man has on them, but you go from not Rubio, forgot his name. The man, he called his wife a dog, and then now he's kissing up to this man.
Ted Cruz. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He won't be removed. The only way to remove him is through by voting November of this year. So everyone needs to do their part.
Okay. Dan, thank you so much. Which brings me to, you know, for example, another point. I don't think that anyone is under the illusion that Donald Trump is going to be removed. I think the issue that a lot of people are concerned about, if they are concerned about this trial, is whether or not we are going to hear from the witnesses who may give reasonable people, no matter what their political persuasion may be, some pause. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, you know, because I think a lot of people would like to see, for instance, the former National Security Advisor John Bolton come and speak.
Absolutely.
And John Bolton has a book deal. So, you know, he's not going to, you know, he's going to look out for numero uno, right? But, you know, the other side of it, the last caller talked about voting. You know, if you look at the numbers in 2008, there was an upsurge in terms of the number of voters, particularly in the African-American community.
Absolutely.
You look at 2012, it went down, and it went down in the African-American community.
I think that in 2012, black voters came out at a higher rate than white voters.
At a higher rate of white voters, but it was still lower than 2008. Mm-hmm. And now you look at 2016, and there was not that there wasn't that person on the ballot that got people out.
It dropped
in
2016.
And so when you look at this, you know, you look at we talk. I know a lot of people in the last few weeks were sending out condolences and prayers for Congressman John Lewis. We've got to get back to telling the story, because oftentimes we are in the victim role, and we keep playing this role of the victim because we keep getting attacked. We look at what happened with Charlottesville. You look at what happened just this Monday in Richmond. You know, these are really key things that are going on. And in terms of talking about this, we've got to get back to being active. We've got to get back out to work.
Telling the story to whom?
Who's telling the story in America? I mean, who's telling this story about who we are? Yes. Bottom line is we're not voting the way that we are unless we have someone who's energizing us. And that's something that's all around the country, but it's also something that's in the African-American community.
We're back to the poll, because one of the things that comes out of this poll, it says, in addition to suggesting that it is a good time to be a white person, it says a wide majority say that white people don't understand the discrimination faced by black Americans. So that's why I say, who is the audience for that story? Is it white Americans? Because according to this poll, it appears that, you know, white folks are a little tired of white guilt right now.
Well, I think what this poll also shows, though, is that there is at least a lot of belief among blacks, right? A lot of consensus that is extremely important that Donald Trump not be reelected to a second term. So I think black people do understand the stakes, but it's not just on black people to show up. Like, you think there has to be a component of mobilization here. And I think one of the reasons that Democrats rightly were criticized by organizations like Higher Heights and others in 2016 was that they did not do that, right? And they did not do that to those communities that everyone knew were very sensitive to demobilization.
Dr. Carter, I got to stop you. I've got to take a break. I only have about 20 seconds, but hang on. I'm going to let you finish your point. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Stretch is with us with the original Quiet Storm tonight on WHUR. This discussion continues on SiriusXM in just a few minutes. Look, we're going to be taking your phone calls. Call in even after 7:30, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about the impeachment trial going on right now in the U.S. Senate. We're also talking about this new Washington Post Ipsos poll that suggests, among other things, that African Americans believe that President Trump is a racist, and this is not a good time for African Americans in America. My guests are Dr. Niambi Carter, political science professor here at Howard University, Douglas Sloan, Democratic strategist, also Atiba Madian. He is a political strategist as well. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Carter, I cut you off to take the break. Please finish your point.
No, I was just saying that the Democratic Party bears some of the burden here, right? Because it's not just about blacks not showing up. It's not giving blacks something to show up for and not mobilizing some of the most marginal communities and the communities that were most easily dissuaded, right, by some of the demobilization campaigns we talked about in 2016, like false information and that kind of thing. So I think there are a lot of factors at play as to why 2016 was a bad year in that respect. But as I tell people all the time, we have to remember Hillary Clinton did win on the popular vote. And I think that's something to think about also.
And I also think that, you know, 2016, when I say tell the story, there when a candidate, when a Democrat loses the election, the first ones that people want to blame is the black community.
Absolutely.
Which is wrong.
Which is crazy.
Because 56% of white women voted for who? Donald Trump.
That's right.
And so when I say tell the story, I'm saying tell the story. You know, one of the things that I appreciate being here is, you know, traditional radio used to be one of the ways that we were able to really tell the story. We were able to get out our messages.
That's right.
Now people are relying so much
on TV.
Right. Now people are relying so much. But we could trust what we were hearing on the radio. Now people are relying on social media. And we know what happened in 2016. That's what we have been told. That's why we have this trial right now with Donald Trump. So when we look at this, and you mentioned, Dr. Carter, about the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party does bear the burden, but so does the voter. So when I say the voter, it's because we have put so much of our political capital into one political party that, for instance, you look at Alabama with the Senate race.
Mm-hmm. Doug Jones.
Right. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I loved was my phone going off when they were talking about CNN polling and they were talking about the different counties. And when they started getting to Selma and talking about Montgomery and those numbers were coming in, my friends throughout the day in Alabama have been texting me like, we've been standing in line. We've been nodding each other like, we got this. Doug Jones won that race because
of the black vote.
But
when specifically black women.
Yes. Black women, exactly. But when he got to Washington, hush. We haven't seen him give back to those voters. And so unless we hold these elected officials accountable once they're in office, you can't just vote for somebody in office, wipe your hands, and go home.
Absolutely.
You got to stay engaged in the political process.
Yeah,
I agree. But I think the other part of this, though, is this comes to a larger question about the breakdown of this sort of duopoly on our political system, right? Because part of this is that black voters are captured. Republicans are not really a viable option at this particular point, and they've not been a viable option by their choice for a very long time. And I think it's sort of like, yeah, we can talk about trying to leverage the black vote and other kinds of things, but I think the realities of not having viable options beyond these two parties hamstrings that to a certain extent. So it's opt out of the political system, which is really dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Choose the lesser of two evils, which leaves everyone unhappy, right, and less motivated year after year, right? Or I think there's another possibility. Let's think about putting some other people in the pipeline to run for these offices so you don't just have a Doug Jones or some of these other folks. And I think it leaves with Ilhan Omar and AOC and Ayanna Presley and Lauren Underwood and other folks, we see that there is possibility and there is energy and people want new blood. And that's somewhere we can also think about putting our effort.
So I wanted to dovetail on what Atiba said regarding it being the responsibility of the voter. I couldn't agree more. Actually, I am in favor of blacks continuing to vote for Democrats. I think we're doing the right thing. There is no other ethnic group that can claim the mantle of the Democratic Party more than black people, black women in particular. We are the Democrats. So what we're just missing the final step here. There is no other group that votes for any political party, ethnic group that votes for any political party like blacks vote for Democrats. We just need to hold those elected officials accountable to the needs of the black community when they get in office. And if they are not responsive to our needs, then vote them out in the primary.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Zora, calling from Howard County. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This has been a lot of discussion, but I think we also need to remind people on basic civics. Basic civics. From the county that you live in or the block that you live in, people have been disengaged, and I'm sorry for that, but I'm also tired of hearing about folks need to be energized. The fact that black folks still got a vote needs to energize them. Because at this rate, the way these people are going, that's they're purging voter rolls already. And who are the people who are being purged?
Black people and young people.
Mm-hmm.
Black people, young people, and old people.
Some older people too.
Mm-hmm. Most of whom are black who were not born in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go, Zora. Thank you so much for that. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Hey, Will, calling from Dallas, Texas. What's on your mind?
Hey, Hey, Hal, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I was thinking they were saying in the Senate that they had four senators that might swing on the other side to make this thing a little rough on Trump. But I was thinking of Adam Schiff, pulled that recording. You remember when President Trump, when he was deciding what party he's going to run for? And they had him on tape where he said run for Republicans because you can tell them anything. Mm. If I was Adam Schiff, I would play that on the radio till the cows come home.
Tell the story.
There you go. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. You know, one of the things that you mentioned, I believe it was you, Doug, earlier when you were talking about the employment numbers are part of the Obama legacy.
Absolutely.
I want to throw this out to you just to be fair and to talk about the reality of politics. President Obama inherited a horrific economy from George Bush. Once he was in office, it wasn't the economy that he inherited from George Bush. It was the Obama economy that he saved us.
Absolutely.
From saving the car industry. That's to right. Everything else. And so, you know, once you're in it, you own it. Is that still a valid argument for Donald Trump? He's, you know, he may have picked it up from Obama, but now he's in it and he owns it.
Well, we can't cite different programs that Trump has enacted or policies that Trump has enacted to better the economy. The only thing I can think of is his tax cuts for the rich, which are not helping the middle class or the working class.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we can cite Obama with his tax cuts program that helped the middle class and working class with all the programs that he did for people in terms of cash for clunkers and so on and so forth that actually helped people of color, as well as many working class programs. So, you know, in that respect, I can say, yes, Obama definitely took ownership and made that economy his. Whereas Trump, I just haven't seen, and, you know, maybe someone can speak to this for me, I haven't seen the policies and initiatives to help the working class, to help the middle class, to help the people that are really in need. That would make this economy, or at least the good aspects of the economy, his. All I see is what? He started a trade war with China that's hurting the farmers. Yes, tax cuts for the rich. That's not helping anybody. That's definitely not helping the middle class or anyone that's making under $250,000 a year. I don't see any of his policies that are helping someone. And if they are, I'm all ears.
Dr. Carter, let me throw this out to you. And this is kind of my own little, you know, analysis of the poll. Pre-poll, and I just want to throw this out and just kind of go with me here.
Okay.
I could argue anecdotally, when I start talking to my friends and associates, that 2019 was not a good year for a lot of people, okay? Blanket statement.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I began to formulate in my head, and this just happened, I was in the newsroom, this was around Christmas, and President Trump came up, and once again, he was spitting out this spirit of negativity.
Uh-huh.
No matter what you thought about President Obama, no matter what you thought about President Bush, one or two, no matter what you thought about Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton, and now I'm starting to say my age, even if you didn't like their policies, none of those men that I just mentioned were inherently negative when they spoke in the capacity of the president. I think it is easy to argue that we haven't gotten a whole lot of smiles and positivity from President Trump. Do you believe, and this is where the poll comes in, when black folks start talking about the fact that they don't like where America is going right now, do you think that the personality of the president, not the policy, but the personality of the president really can have an overarching impact on the way Americans feel while he is in office?
Absolutely. I think it absolutely does matter. And you have to remember, this time last year, we were in a shutdown. And remember, that really hurt this area and a number of folks who were federal employees who had their lives upended because of this administration. So I absolutely think the president, not just sort of his negativity, but what he seems to champion, right? I mean, this is the same guy who said after Charlottesville there were good people on both sides. So this man has made it very clear, like I said before, that he is happy to play footsie with racists. He is happy to pander, and when he doesn't get his way, he is happy to endanger and hurt the lives of people that he doesn't value. And he does not value other Americans. I don't care if they're of his party or not. I mean, he is, I think, probably the worst modern president, hands down.
And you know, Atiba, here's, and to that point, a couple of weeks ago, we had a black woman on who was a Republican, and there was a very muscular debate about President Trump's touting of employment numbers. She was doing the talking points, okay, when it came to how she believed African Americans should view the president. She kept talking about money. But one of my other guests, and I'm not sure, maybe Dr. Carter on that program, I'm not sure who was on it, but one of the things that came up was the character of the president is just as important as what he believes in and his policies. And she was saying, our African-American Republican was saying that sticks and stones, break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And so she didn't really care about, you know, whether he was messing around on his wife, whether he was a nasty man or whatever. Mm-hmm. She was just looking at the money. What do you believe?
Sports and politics. It's just like people pick a sports team. You know, no matter how bad that sports team is, as long as there's a chance, mathematical chance, that they still may make it to the championship, we still want to go for that team. We still want to believe. You know, in terms of where we're looking at this right now from the economy, I just want to step back. When we took civics education out of schools, that's when this started to crumble. So when we talked about, one of the callers talked about engagement in the community, we don't have that community engagement anymore. We don't have people coming together, those community meetings, and talking. Mm-hmm. You know, I can go to ANC meetings right here in Washington, D.C., and we're talking about this on a national level. But right now, right here in this city, we have some serious, serious issues that are confronting us, yet we have elected officials who look like us. We have people who we talk about in the economy that's leaving people behind right here in this very city. We have an economy that is leaving and disenfranchising the poor and the middle class to the point where many of them can't even live in the city. So in 2018, we had Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez come to D.C. Mm-hmm. And what did she tell us before she came in, before she was sworn in? I can't afford
to live
in D.C. until I get sworn in and get my first check. That's real. And we're not talking about these things. So when I say things like tell the story, you know, sticks and stones, yeah, that's true. That's how these people are playing this game. And they're pushing our buttons and calling names and saying things. The president calls names all the time because they know we can't punch back or we won't punch back with the same thing. If you look at what happened in the 60s, you look at how we've gotten things, it's because we were willing to fight. Now, whether or not we did it violently or nonviolently, we fought back. And right now, I don't see that there is a strategy. I think everyone is relying on this idea that we can vote our way out of this. But we're going to have to, as Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without a struggle. It never has and it never will.
Well, I'm going to have to come in behind Frederick Douglass now. That's my name.
With two S's.
With two S's. He called
and,
over
and
right
you've got
there.
Power. That's where you see McConnell flexing his muscle. What are you going to do? What are the Democrats going to do?
The Democrats, well, first of all, you just hit on so many points that I want to address there. Very quickly, regarding community engagement, I think we have a problem because we're all caught up in social media. Everybody has their faces in their phones all the time. They're not talking. They're not engaging. They're not really going to meetings. Everybody's doing it through Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. And I feel that's damaging us, number one. That's kind of another conversation. Number two, regarding McConnell and the Democrats, very quickly, the Democrats need to be more aggressive right now. And forgive me for using this boxing reference. Democrats are fighting Marcus of Queensbury rules, using Marcus of Queensbury rules, which are the normal classic rules of boxing. And Republicans are cage fighting. And they are beating our behinds on a regular basis. I saw an ad that went out against the senator in Colorado. His name is mistaking me right now. The Republican senator in Colorado.
Gardner?
I think it's Gardner. And it was the most vicious ad that I've ever seen. Better yet, it was done against a Republican. And I was like, oh, my God, that ad is brutal. We need to do more ads like that. And, of course, who wrote
it? We need to fight dirty.
Right. Who wrote the ad? Rick Wilson, Republican strategist. Okay, because we have Republicans out that have actually defected from the Republican Party because they cannot deal with Trump.
We have
Republicans. So I just want to say that we have to be girded for wartime. We have to organize. I think it was Gandhi or King. I will look up the quote that said, "Those that love peace must learn to organize as well as those that love war." That's what we need to do because we have seen bad things happen when Republicans are in power.
And Republicans, in my opinion, are good at fighting and winning.
Absolutely.
At all costs.
Not necessarily good at governing.
No. And Democrats spend more time with this moral argument about being right. It's okay to be right and to fight for that right.
Absolutely.
But it's not okay to stand and just think that you can just sway and get public opinion. Hillary Clinton had 3 million plus people running on a campaign of stronger together. But did she fight for that? Even when she had lost, you look at Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, she lost by 77,000 votes.
Right.
And then she went away. She didn't. Jill Stein, Russian money again,
right,
was the one who called for a recount. And then you had all these liberal Democrats giving money to her to do it. And then she went away and took the money.
Let me, Dr. Carter, we are in January, but the election is a little more than 10 months away. What do you believe this impeachment trial portends for the election season as we get closer to November? Do you think it will matter to black folks?
Well, I mean, I think it will in the sense that they've already decided they're not voting for him. But I don't think this is going to be the thing that makes black people not vote for him. They've had 3 years, right, going on 4 years to decide not to vote for him for any number of reasons, right? I mean, we can think about his lack of disaster response in Puerto Rico. We can think of children being warehoused at the border and separated from their families in some of the most horrific health and some of the most horrific conditions, right? I mean, there are a number of reasons not to vote for Donald Trump. I don't think impeachment is what's sending black voters over the edge. Now, what this does for his base, I think, is going to be really important. I think this will energize them. I think this will get them to rally around him. No one's mind is being changed who is a rabid Donald Trump fan. Now, will this maybe sway some of those folks who are on the margins, who sort of voted for him because they wanted to send a message or because they were deeply displeased with the political establishment on both the Democratic and Republican sides? Maybe, but those people have to be aware and paying attention and realize why this is important. And I do think, I'm sorry, which of the panels has been saying this the whole night, but about narrative is important because part of what I have to do over and over and over again is remind my students, for example, that this is not normal. This is not normal behavior. These are not usual times, that impeachment is not a normal process, and why that's important, and why these things are crimes, and why these things are prohibited behaviors for a president. Because a lot of people don't actually know, and I agree with civic education being very important, even if it's the most sort of rudimentary, right? Having people know that most of the ways we do things in Washington have been by tradition. Like one caller brought up the tax returns. That's only by tradition. That's not a rule that that's something that people have to do. Donald Trump knows this, and not only does he know this, he doesn't care. He doesn't care about rules. He doesn't care about decorum. Republicans don't care about rules or decorum. We've seen that today, right? They've been talking about throwing out all of the Bill Clinton rules in order to rally around their guy. So they don't actually have anything except no shame. And I think Democrats need to take a little bit of that because Republicans just act and then ask for forgiveness later. Whereas Democrats sit here and do all this excessive moralizing and hand-wringing and don't do a very good job of telling people why this is important. So for black folks, no, they have more than enough evidence to not vote for Donald Trump. They don't need a Ukrainian phone call to tell them why.
Let me ask you one other thing, Dr. Carter. When we look at this, you know, this poll, for example, and as you drill down with some of these numbers, where 90% of black folks disapprove of his job performance, 83% say he's racist, 77% say he deserves some or hardly any credit for black unemployment, and on and on and on. This poll is about black people. But from your perspective, what does this poll about black people say about white people?
Well, I think one of the conversations that we've not had well in this country, and that's regardless of political stripes, is one about white supremacy. I think we are very comfortable talking about racism, right? It's this belief that, you know, these people are better than these people and they shouldn't have these things. But when I'm talking about white supremacy, I'm really talking about these institutional ways in which we enshrine whiteness as the standard. And that's whether you're talking about criminal justice, that's talking about banking policies, that's talking about housing policies, right? That's talking about insurance. All of these interlocking systems which value whiteness in real ways. They're paid more, right? They get better mortgage rates. Their houses in their communities are valued more. And these things are really important, and we've never done that. And I think part of the work that needs to be done when we talk about sort of this election of a Donald Trump is about white people and white people voting their whiteness rather than their interests. Because there are a lot of white folks who benefited from the Affordable Care Act, for example. But because it was from Barack Obama, because a certain segment of the white population believed that he was a secret Muslim who had usurped the presidency, they were willing to vote against their own interests, their own needs, to elect this white guy who had promised them nothing, right, other than he was going to make America great again, which was really a nice way of saying those brown people, those black people, those other people who take your jobs and make you feel less than, I'm not going to give them a place anymore in this world.
And let's not forget that the language that the president has used, America first, make America great again, it's all been predicated within white supremacy. Let's not forget that Theodore Roosevelt, I believe it was, who signed the order that changed the name of the White House from the President's House. Mm-hmm. You know, when you had a black man then go live in that White House, you know how that stirred up so many emotions? But also, let us also not forget what happens when we have high voter turnout. High voter turnout is what got Barack Obama elected. High voter turnout is what got a large number, the historic number of women elected to the United States Congress in 2018, as well as down that ballot, which we don't always hear about. We always hear about the national thing. We don't know about what happened in state legislatures where Democrats took over control or mansions. Look at Virginia right now. Virginia in 2019, it turned. It flipped. Nobody thought it could flip. Why? High voter turnout. So now we have 2020 right here. And what the Republicans are going to try to do is to make sure that they suppress. That's why we're seeing this purging of voters from these roles.
That's right.
They want to suppress the vote. They know they cannot win because if the numbers are too large, so large, they can't manipulate the outcome.
And they're doing more than just purging the voter rolls and suppressing the vote. They are cutting out the souls to the polls on Sunday in many states where black people come out to vote, where they get bused to the polls. We bust each other to the polls in the black churches on Sundays. They are eliminating different voting precincts, so they have to travel further. They are restricting the times in which you can vote. So this is a whole...
Tell the story.
Yeah, this is a whole strategy to suppress the vote, where they're using many different tactics to suppress the black and minority vote in these states to try to maintain that white majority in these elected positions. And it is so critical that we have black and minority and women representation in these state houses because they draw up the congressional districts.
Well, yeah, and it's funny that when you talk about yesterday, there were two things that happened yesterday that I was particularly struck by. One of them was a tweet by the president, which goes back to what some people would call narcissism at worst or moral deficit at best, where it is always about him. It is always about him. Even on MLK Day, where this tweet says it was actually exactly 3 years ago today, meaning yesterday, January 20th, 2017, that he was sworn into office. So appropriate that today is also MLK Junior Day. That's sacrilegious. African American unemployment is the lowest in the history of our country by far. Also, best poverty, youth, and unemployment numbers ever. Great. You know, the thing that evangelicals have always stood by, where you're talking about, looking at people who should have high morals, or people who are thinking about others instead of themselves. That is who you guys elected. Okay. Right. But the other thing, which has nothing to do with this, which also struck me, was what happened in Richmond yesterday, where you had all of these white guys and white women and four or five black folks walking around with some of the most aggressive and in my opinion, some scary stuff. I don't have a gun, so be mad at me. Mm-hmm. But walking around in the streets with these weapons. And I saw somebody on Twitter saying, if those 22,000 law-abiding gun owners were people of color, you could really see a movement to change the Second Amendment.
Absolutely.
If those were black folks or black and brown folks instead of all white folks. And I think, those two issues, just looked at in a vacuum, is an opportunity for black and brown folks to really pay attention to what's happening in November.
Well, go Absolutely. To 1972 and look at when the Black Panther movement was at its heyday. Yep. And look at where the conservative movement and what their position was on gun control.
Yeah, yeah. And then Ronald Reagan changed the law after, as governor of California, after they encountered those Black Panthers with guns. And just trying to dovetail on Atiba's point very quickly, I think it was just yesterday or today that the Virginia legislature ruled against relaxing gun yeah. laws in Virginia. And then a Republican state legislature said we should cede Alexandria and Arlington County back to the district, which is
yeah,
hilarious.
Yeah, that's
but, if it goes to statehood, I'm with it.
Yeah, there you go. Look, I want to thank you all, Dr. Niambi Carter, Douglas Sloan, and Atiba Madjoun. Thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.